after years on the road, Timmy parked the van and picked up the mic to bring you this podcast that features interviews with people from hardcore to hair metal. This is Talk To Me with your host, Joshua Toomey.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into Talk To Me. This is episode 203, and the guest this week is Jordan Rudess of Dream Theater. Their album Distance Over Time is out now, and they are currently on tour, so make sure you're checking them out. They're out doing a two-part set, half Metropolis Part 2 in its entirety, and then I guess half hits from the past kind of thing. So make sure you're checking them out on tour and checking out Distance Over Time. And we've also got a special guest on this episode. It is Doug Smith. Doug, how are you doing, man?
What's up, guys? How are you? I'm outstanding.
Good. Doug is a part of Scorpion Percussion and the Dirtbag Clothing line. And let's start with Scorpion Percussion. What is the main thing you guys do over there? I noticed on the websites a lot of drumsticks. Is that kind of the forte there, is drumsticks?
Yes, sir. We manufacture the country's best sticks. You know, we use American weapon grade hickory. We take a lot of care and the small detail looks on the product itself. We do some of the few extra steps in production that the bigger companies can't do. And because of that, we have a more durable stick, and we're having a lot of luck and a lot of people enjoying it.
What are those extra steps, being someone that's not too familiar in the process of making a drumstick?
Man. Most of it's sorting stuff. So a lot of the bigger companies, you know, they have automated, you know, sequences and processes. And because of that, they have less human interaction and hands-on with the products. Mm-hmm. You know, they're selling so many sticks a month that, you know, you just can't keep up with it. But with us being a smaller company, we're able to kind of look at the details a little bit more.
Okay.
And you know, we're able to sort them differently. We do weight matching for the pairs and stuff like that, so drummers are getting inside the pair of sticks that they get. The sticks are weighing the same. You know. Part of what makes our sticks a little better is the density. You know, we use the higher density of the wood, which makes it a little heavier, but it also creates a better, stronger durability. Higher moisture content, stuff like that, you know, little tips and tricks.
What wood makes the best drumstick? How into that are you guys?
Oh, we're into all that sciencey stuff. My partner, Dan, the founder of Scorpion, I call him the stick wizard.
Okay.
He's all about that little detail stuff, man, that most drummers don't even realize that it matters, or, you know, they kind of just inherently take it for granted because it's part of drumsticks. A lot of guys don't care. You know, they just want to buy some sticks and rock out. It's kind of subjective. You know, everybody likes their own kind. I know they make some sticks out of oak. There's some Japanese oak called Shirakashi that some of the companies offer. Hickory is probably the most general and one of the stronger ones.
Mm-hmm.
They also use maple. You know, so there's a few different types of wood. It's all about weight, density, feel, balance, you know, the tone when the drummers are actually playing the heads on their particular kits. You know, each wood, you know, causes a resonation of some sort. And, you know, the oak might resonate differently than hickory or maple does. Kind of the same effect like a guitar, you know, as guitars are made out of different wood.
Right.
You know, and then it's all about cost, you know, cost and affordability and stuff like that. You know, what woods cost, what's cost efficient for people and things like that. But what we've done is we use hickory. We call it all weapon grade, American weapon grade hickory. You know, we feel that hickory is the for the price point of the wood stock and the you know, the price level that's offered at full retail for the consumers. You know, hickory is the best bang for your buck. And the way that we put our little touch on it just makes it that much better.
What different like signature models do you guys have? I noticed on the website you had a few different, is it a different design or is that, I'm drumstick illiterate, so I need to understand what your different signature series are.
Yeah, no, you're good, man. I've been with the company for about a year, and as a bass player, I've had to learn a lot about drumsticks in the last 12 months. So I actually enjoy it because I also do a lot of woodworking and carpentry and in building and things like that. So it was kind of a natural fit for me. You know, I was like, oh, drumsticks, wood, that's awesome. But yeah, man, the signature series. So what we have is a few services. We offer a few products. We offer a few services. The main product we sell is the American weapon grade hickory sticks. We call them the Immortal series. So when people ask, what do you sell? We sell one stick and we sell it really good. We put all of our effort into just making that one series of stick the best that we can. And, you know, inherently they got the name Immortal Series because they seem to last a lot longer than the other drumstick companies. We offer some other products. You know, we have merchandise and things like that that we offer, customization of earplug cases and things like that, services. You know, we offer signature customization where artists can, you know, they pay a one-time fee and a print charge, and they can put their artwork and signatures on their sticks, which we do in-house. We have a laser machine now that enables us to be able to laser directly to the wood or use print. We also use that to custom engrave artist logos on earplug cases and stuff that we sell with plugs that they can like resell at their shows. We found a lot of luck with that. Yeah, man, just great customer service. We pick up the phone when an artist calls us. We, you know, like,
yeah,
he's got the number one complaint from working musicians in modern day is that they, you know, they don't want to go to Guitar Center and pay $10 a pair for sticks that are going to break in two practices, you know?
Right.
And, you know, the quality over time has gone down in the drumstick world and the price has gone up and people are getting burned out. And we're kind of in the business to get it back to the way it used to be, you know? Good quality product that lasts a long time for a fair price and actually pick up the phone when an artist calls us or emails us or Facebook messages us or however they contact us. That's like one of the biggest complaints besides their sticks breaking faster than they used to is that when they reach out to companies about endorsements or about, you know, trouble, you know, an order or something that was messed up or a product question, they don't even get a response. And that sucks.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And what we're going to do is after the Jordan Rudess interview, we're going to do a giveaway of a grab bag of swag, as we're going to say it, a t-shirt, some sticks, and just pretty much anything they can find laying around the office, they're going to throw in a box and send out to you. So we will tell you details of that after the Jordan Rudess interview. And I wanted to get into, you were also stated in the email, I don't know how this works out, but she said you're a part of the Dirtbag Clothing family. What does that mean?
So I'm involved with Dirtbag as well. Dirtbag John and I've been friends for a long time. Mm-hmm. I've known that guy for 15 years, and for the past 8, I've been working with him side by side with Dirtbag, coming up with a lot of the endorsement and pipeline and TSC and all the little programs that we offer for Dirtbag, which are pretty incredible. And in my opinion, we're changing the game. It hasn't changed the game yet, but obviously, I think just with time and some pressure, I think we can. I think we're gonna make a big impact on artists in modern day 2025, 2022, and I think it's gonna be great, man. For Dirtbag, you know, we've developed. Dirtbag's always been in the music area, right? That's been a big market for us. We feel that people resonate with the brand in music, and it has been that way for the last 25 years. Like when John started this up in the Bay Area in the mid-90s, you know, it was at concerts and stuff that he was getting a lot of people like, whoa, dude, Dirtbag, what's that? You know, nobody had put the word Dirtbag on a shirt yet. And it just happened to be during the dot-com boom, and he was in the Bay Area up where all the dot-com boom was happening. And, you know, I think John's credited with actually one of the first like 20 online e-commerce stores ever.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, you know, crazy. And, you know, he's been doing it since the mid 90s when you had dial up internet. And, it's kind of just morphed into this beautiful program where we offer again, different products and services to the artists, obviously with the mind of taking care of the artist as well as, growing the brand, with the artist. In our family, in our group, you know, the Dirtbag is it's a lifestyle brand. You know, it's all about being passionate and doing things your way and being a rock star, regardless if you're, you know, drilling for oil in Texas or if you're playing the drums in Chicago. Like it just, you know, Dirtbag applies to a lot of people out there, and you can either be a dirtbag or not. You know.
And before we get into this week's interview with Jordan Rudess, I have to tell you guys that the Talk To Me podcast is brought to you by our good friend Scott Bowling down in Atlanta, Georgia. Yes, check out his show Good Company with Bowling over on YouTube. He has great, well-done, well-shot interviews with guys like Head from Korn, Guys in Islander, POD, Nonpoint, Seven Dust, Stuck Mojo, Hell Yeah, and so much more. So make sure to head over to scottgoodcompany.com or search him out on YouTube at Good Company with Bowling and let him know that the Talk To Me podcast sent you. Also, it would be great if you guys went over to iTunes, left a nice 5-star rating, nice 5-star review. Haven't had a review in a while, and I don't want to beg for reviews, but I would love to see some new reviews over there. So make sure to head over to iTunes, leave a nice 5-star rating, nice 5-star review. And if you guys want to support the podcast monetarily, head over to patreon.com/talktome. Choose a tier, and that will be much appreciated. Well, let's get into my interview with Jordan Rudess. Let's check out some classic Dream Theater right now. Talk to Jordan, listen to his pick, and then we will get back to Doug momentarily. guys, we've got Jordan Rudis from Dream Theater on the line. Distance Over Time is the album out, and they've got a tour starting March 20th in San Diego. Jordan, man, how's it going today?
It's going very well. Just been enjoying talking about the music today and hanging out with some cool people on the phone.
Very good, man. So let's kind of dive into it. You know, I was kind of looking into it. You know, this is the 10th studio album, Dream Theater, and then you have 1,000 solo albums. How do you continue to come up with music, and how do you continue to write so much?
Wow. Well, as long as there's a keyboard around or a pencil in hand and some music paper, or any digital form of getting my ideas down, I'll create music because that's kind of what I do. You know, one of the things that I love to do is just to sit at the piano and just play whatever comes into my head. Mm-hmm. And I would have to say that there's always something that will come into my head, whether it's great or not. Well, we can decide. But I don't have any shortage of musical ideas. For me, making music is kind of like talking, maybe even easier. It just kind of can come out.
Do you have to ever like kind of check yourself to make sure you haven't already written this certain part before?
Well, yeah, I mean, for sure. You got to, you know, you try to be conscious of that, but very often there are things floating around your head and, you know, you could cross over and overlap with something.
So, yeah, not only do you have to worry about hearing other things that are not you and kind of by proxy taking from them, and then also you have to worry about your own career.
Right. But there's only 12 notes, so that's the other thing.
That's insane. Distance Over Time's out. Looks like it's top 10, like, all over the world. So many records deep, so deep into the career. How does that feel for you guys to still have such loyal fans that are still picking up the records?
Well, it's so amazing. You know, this has been a long career with Dream Theater. It's one of these bands that just, you know, lasts. Not only has been around for a long time, but it's still really vital. Mm-hmm. And this album really, you know, kind of like, I don't know, proves that or cements that. And it's really cool because, you know, this is a band of guys who are really, who, you know, really care about the music, about each other, about the responsibility of the business that we created. We enjoy playing live. We enjoy being in the studio. It's a very vital organization. And even the people around us are, you know, all so supportive and kind of, you know, help be part of this amazing team that just has this, you know, great life to it. So, you know, this is this, you know, the way that this new album has been received is awesome. You know, it's great.
I've heard other interviews, read a lot about the process of writing Distance Over Time. I know you guys kind of went to a cabin, locked yourselves in, and really hunkered down to write this. And the one thing that's nice about that to me is you hear so much now of file sharing riffs between each other and people living all around the world and writing albums that way. And to actually get in a room and jam, there's nothing that can beat that.
Well, we had a great time. It was definitely something very positive about being in the room, you know, together doing that, just having people's reactions to ideas as they come up instead of being on your own. And, you know, like you said, like a project where you're just sending files around or whatever. In this case, I could play something and I could watch Mike Mangini like jump out of his seat in excitement
right.
And smiling and laughing. And, you know, that is like really great, because then if somebody else in the band responds to an idea that you have, you know that they're going to lend their full like support to it, which is what you want. You want everybody to come into the riffs feeling like, okay, this is cool, we're going to dig into this, and you can really kind of work that way and judge that and just have that be part of the whole process. And it enabled us to just have this great spirited time there, so that it worked, you know, really worked, you know. And the cool thing was that we had scheduled like 2 months of writing in this barn. Mm-hmm. And, you know, thought about, well, what happens if we don't finish? Because 2 months doesn't seem that long, but we finished writing in under a month and we didn't rush. I mean, we were just there and there was no, you know, it wasn't like there were any interruptions in our flow. We just kept working and having a great time just being in this cool spot. And we, you know, we take breaks, we'd have barbecue and the different various guys would show off their cooking skills, and you know, so there was a lot of fun around it. But we worked, you know, a lot. We were definitely just churning away in there writing music.
And I notice on this one, it's just so heavy. Like, it just comes out of the gate heavy. Do you guys ever go in and say, like, we need to write a heavy album, let's write some more melodic stuff? Do you guys talk about that, or is it just what comes out?
Dream Theater has always been a very conscious band of the direction and you know where we want our albums to kind of head towards. What we want, it's amazing because in every way we kind of think it through. We'll start talking about it, obviously, months before we go into the studio. What kind of album would be cool to create? What would make sense to create? And then we start refining it and just kind of all zeroing in on the energy of what we want to do. And we'll even go so far as like writing it down, like, you know, whether it's in the studio on some massive, chalkboard or these extended kind of notebooks that we keep. So we definitely do that kind of homework, and we're pretty good at that. It's one of the talents of this band is to kind of project what we want to do and then make it happen.
And on this tour, you're going to be celebrating Metropolis Part 2, Scenes from a Memory. Will this be like a two-set deal where you do one set of the album and then one set of, you know, just a smorgasbord of hits over the years?
Well, yeah, it's going to be definitely, because the second set is all going to be Scenes from a Memory from start to finish. And the first set will be, you know, the new album and then some catalog stuff that we chose that we thought would be effective to play in this show. It's going to be a really intense show. We have, some great, great visuals that are going to be, with a lot of it. Our lighting guy is spectacular. Our main kind of Dream Theater lighting guy is with us again for this tour. Some cool staging. And it's going to be awesome. We had 5 days of rehearsal last week. And, you know, although that was crazy because there's just so much to put together, you know, it's going to come together. And it should be a really great time for everybody.
And that's the album that you came into the band on too, correct?
Well, Scenes from Memory, yes.
Yeah.
20 years ago, that was the first album that I ever did with the band. It doesn't feel like that long ago, but of course it's 20 years ago. And so it's a celebration of that album, the anniversary of the album, but it's also kind of a celebration of my 20 years and probably more like 21 since I joined, obviously before that album was recorded. But so it's a real, for me, this is a very important, very exciting tour, because it just means, you know, it just means a lot in every way.
And do you like to do these, you know, full-on album tours that where you're playing albums in their entirety?
I like it once I've, you know, learned, in this case, relearned everything. It's just, you know, it's always, before a tour, it's always intense because it's kind of like, okay, what songs are we going to do? For me, it's like, where's the data? Because I'm, you know, I use these synthesizers that are more like computers, and, you know, everything, if I made whatever sounds for things, whether it be strings, choirs, organs, pianos, sound effects, who the hell knows what, I have to, have to kind of locate that, put it together and map it out from my keyboard. So like for Scenes, I had to go back and find all the sounds, in some case, recreate a bunch of things. And then when all that work is done, you know, then it's like, okay, ready to go, play.
How hard is it for you to recreate those sounds if you have to go back and try to figure out what you did on something?
That's not the most fun thing to do in the world. But, a complicated song, like let's say, luckily I found the sounds for like Dance of Eternity. Mm-hmm. But if I had to recreate that and go from scratch, that'd take me like a good day to do that.
A couple other things I was kind of going through the history of you. One thing that jumped out and I wanted to ask you about was your work with David Bowie. Did you actually physically work in the studio with David Bowie back on the Heathen album, or was that just more of a session deal?
No, I was in the studio for 12 days up on the top of a mountain in the Catskills, New York, working with him. It was a real experience. I was called by producer Tony Visconti, who I had worked with Annie Haslam, the singer from Renaissance, and also I'd done some work with Tony for a group called Prefab Sprout. And David wanted to try something a little bit different for this album. And so he asked Tony, you know, about who he thought they should use. And my name came up. So Tony gave me a call and asked me to come down to work with David on this new album. So, yeah, it was 12 days of, putting that together.
Did you learn anything working with him, like maybe how his brain worked at all, or just, or was it just kind of like working with just another musician?
Well, he was a very interesting guy. Mm-hmm. He was very well-spoken, he could weave stories, and, you know, it was really kind of charming. And it was, and I did learn a lot. I learned a lot about, you know, just being kind of a studio musician and trying to, you know, not come in there with the big ego and just kind of like do whatever he wanted. And this was a big lesson for me, the Bowie sessions, because honestly, when I got the call, even though I wasn't a huge Bowie fan, of course, I was very well aware of who David Bowie is.
Right.
I thought, wow, this is like an opportunity. I can change his life. I can bring these cool synthesizers and I can present these ideas and these stylistic things and these sounds. When I got there, that quickly kind of was put to the side, because like the first thing they wanted was, okay, we want you to play a Hammond organ part. I was like, okay. And the next day, and that's fine. And the next day it was like, okay, we're going to do an electric piano part. And then, you know, I said, well, I got about 40 different electric piano sounds, reverse sounds, back, you know, all kinds of different qualities of tone and blah, blah, blah. And they were like, no, we have a Fender Rhodes up in the attic. We're just going to get that. You'll play that. I was like, okay. So, you know, it was kind of like just lay back and see what they needed, what they wanted, and do the best job I could.
That's incredible, man. That's now with his passing, it must be cool to have that on your resume even more.
Yeah, it's pretty cool because he was such an iconic figure, you know.
And last thing, let's jump in here on your solo album you got coming out on April 19th, Wired for Madness. What should people expect from that?
Yeah, so Wired for Madness is coming out on Mascot Records. It's I would say it's a pretty huge project. It was something that I really was inspired to do. It's been a while since I've come out with a solo album that was this kind of large in scope. The last one, probably The Road Home, which was an album of more, you know, progressive rock favorite covers with not many originals on it. But this one is all original music. It ranges from, I could say, like hyper prog. It does get heavy as well, but it also has the parts that are kind of electronic. Some songs on it. I'm singing on it, which may surprise some people out there. There's a slightly progressive blues track which features Joe Bonamassa on guitar.
Nice.
He's a label. We have this blues track is called Just Can't Win and has a full brass ensemble with it and Joe, and we sing in. It's a big production. So yeah, really exciting. Great players. Marco Miniman is on the album. Guthrie Govan, the guitar player. John Petrucci and James LaBrie have little guest appearances on it. And it's, you know, it's called Wired for Madness. It's not a concept album, although the title track is 33 minutes long, and it has a kind of conceptual, it has a conceptual story within itself. So I kind of went from all out crazy prog, like fasten your seatbelts and go for the full journey, to just like laying back. And there's some songs that are, you know, more easily digestible and a little bit more mellow. So I'm very excited about it.
Pre-orders are out now, and I'm sure you can go over to Jordan Rudess. I saw it was on your Facebook page, all the pre-orders and stuff. Sure. There. So make sure you guys Absolutely. Are checking that out. Like we said, Distance Over Time is out now. I saw that it's in a translucent orange vinyl. Do you enjoy like all of the different vinyl stuff that's coming out now?
I think it's so awesome. The great job that Inside Out is doing to you know, to make these physical you know, merchandise pieces so, you know, so desirable. It's cool. You look at it, you go, wow, that's awesome. Like the box set. This looks, I haven't gotten anything yet, but there's some fans out there who have, but that's typical. And it just looks really, really cool. I can't wait to see, and you know, in the physical reality, these packages, because they are beautiful.
And that's the one thing about Dream Theater fans is I don't really feel like there's a passive Dream Theater fan. You're either all in or you just don't care. There's not like, yeah, they're kind of cool. Right. Like, it's like, I love Dream Theater and I will buy everything and I will go to every show. And right, I love that your fandom.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. It's at a point where, you know, I can walk the street and basically just, you know, not be disturbed. But like if I'm walking, you know, like, you know, near a venue on the day of show, well, then, yeah, then there'll be a lot of people that want to stop by. So it's at a good point. And I'm really excited about this reaction to the new album. I think it's so awesome that after this many years of creating music that we can have still kind of like put out stuff and get that kind of feedback and energy back from the fans and keep our careers as vital as it is.
Yeah, you can definitely walk through the mall, but you can't walk through a Guitar Center. So
Right. There you go.
Well, Jordan, man, it's been great chatting with you, and looking forward to hopefully checking out a show on this upcoming tour. And just leave us with a song off Distance Over Time. What would you like to hear?
Why don't we play Barstool Warrior? Because it's one of my favorites off the album.
That's a good one, man. Well, Jordan, have a great rest of your day. Great chatting with you, and good luck with everything.
Thanks, Josh. Take care, man. Right, take bye-bye. Care.
What's up, everybody? This is Rob Rivera from the band Nonpoint, and here I am with Rob's pick from the kit here on the Talk To Me podcast. Before I get into the song we're going to feature, I want to talk about a brand new tour that we will be doing with POD this spring. It's going to be POD, Nonpoint as main support, Hiro the Hero on the first six or seven shows, Islander and Nine Shrines, and this promises to be one of the better packages of the spring. This is going to be a highly energetic show, and I'm very, very excited. You can go to nonpoint.com and check for all the tour dates and ticket information, or you can hit up any of the venue's Facebook pages, and they have ticket links on there. Tickets are on sale currently, right now, and also we have VIP available at nonpointstore.com. We have an acoustic VIP and an exclusive bus hang, so you check that out. Also, I'm going to branch out in the podcast world. Me and my buddy Rob Ruscha, who was the engineer and producer of the Poison Red, and he was the engineer and bassist on the album X, is going to start a podcast with me called the Robcast Podcast. We've already filmed the first two episodes, and this podcast is going to be more focused on the business side, experiences of touring, recording. He's going to be talking about his experiences behind the glass, recording bands, what bands need, latest gear, and all the stuff that he uses to record. I'm going to be talking about my endorsers, the endorsers that Nonpoint have, the ins and outs of touring, the ups and downs, having a family while being in a signed national band, and just talk about music, talk about anything, basically. It's going to be pretty much an open book. When it comes to the stuff that we like, we're not going to hold back with the things that we love. There will be no negativity on the podcast, and we don't mean to talking that we will not be talking about politics or religion or any of that stuff. But anyway, so to the pick of the week, I'm going to pick the band Rush and the song Passage to Bangkok, which is on their 2112 album. I first heard this song, it actually was the live version on All the World is a Stage. And it was the first Rush record I ever heard. And from then on, I was just in love. And still to this day, my favorite band of all time. They have expanded quite a bit from when they first started, where they were called like a Led Zeppelin style band, to what they are today. So definitely check all that, all the Rush catalog out. And without any further ado, here's Rush.
Bang!
All right, guys, huge thank you to Jordan Rudess for coming on the podcast. And we are back once again with Doug Smith of Scorpion Percussion and Dirtbag Clothing and a band called Core, which if you go and check out some of their stuff online, it shows them playing Japan. And I did have a question for you about that. How does a band that's not obviously a household name get over to Japan, and how does that go over?
Oh, man, a lot of relentless work and a few good connections. Mm-hmm. I put a Facebook post out a couple of years ago. I just like shared a meme. It was like top 10 things what makes Japan's culture special, and it was just all about their honor and their loyalty and the politeness of people over there and how the Japanese culture looks out for the other person more than it looks out for themselves, which is kind of opposite of the U.S.
And, right.
And I just shared a meme, and one of my friends was like, "Hey," and I in my post I was like, "One day we're going to go to Japan." I think it's every rock band's dream to play.
Absolutely,
Japan.
Yeah.
And we've talked about it for years. Like, man, one day we're going to do this. And one of our promoter friends from New Mexico, DJ Hawk, she gets on there and she's like, "Hey, you should send me a message. I know a guy." And I'm like, "Okay." So I sent her a message, and she put us in touch with a guy over there that is born in Houston, raised in Houston, and then he's been in Japan for about 6 or 7 years now. He brings Japanese bands to the U.S. and brings U.S. bands to Japan. And we went out on a limb. You know, we had to pay him, obviously, and then cover airfare and Airbnbs and cabs and, you know, all the expenses that come with touring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a little sketchy at first because we're like, man, we're giving this guy, you know, it's $1,500, $2,000. Like, it was some money. But he booked the whole tour, and he arranged all the dates and got us in touch with the bands, and all of that's worth $2,000 to me. So, you know, I've booked tours. I've booked almost every show we've ever played, and it's a nightmare, dude. Booking is the worst thing in the planet. I've been booking shows for 15 years, and I'm still no better at it than I was 15 years ago. So I don't know if it's me or if it's just the nature of the beast, but one of the two.
Yeah, booking anything's a nightmare. So I can imagine trying to book an entire Japanese tour. How long were you guys over in Japan?
So last year we actually did two tours to Japan. We did 17 days in April last year, and then we did 15 days on October. And both were equally as amazing. The second one, we noticed some growth for our brand personally. You know, people from the first tour came back out to the second one, even though they weren't playing. We got a chance to play with some of Japan's top rock and metal bands. All of the bands in Japan, all the musicians are incredible people, incredible players. And it was just an honor, dude. Like, we got, you know, that's a lifetime achievement kind of checkbox for us. We're actually talking about going back in August again, because it's easy for us being in San Diego to take an Uber to the airport, hop on a plane, 12 hours later be in Tokyo, and then we're in Japan for 2 weeks and just walking around with our guitars and eating noodles and sushi and seeing awesome shows, and it's great.
How do they respond to a band that's not on the radar, but you kind of come over there and put out that you're from the States? Do they take a little bit more interest in you?
Absolutely. I would say so. Yeah. The being from the West has its appeals for sure. I think Japan has got one of the greatest rock and metal cultures, you know, because they cherish it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't take it for granted and they don't take advantage of it. And it's, you know, it's just like the Germanic countries and Northern European countries. That's like Mecca for rock and metal, you know, and it's kind of the same mindset. You know, they really appreciate art and they appreciate humility. Everybody's very nice to each other and cordial and respectful. There's no, like in the U.S., there's competition and you go to shows and people don't set up their gear fast enough and people take up all the time on stage. And it's like, none of that exists, man. If a show starts at 7 in Japan, it starts at 7. And if it's over at 11, it's over at 11. It's beautiful. And the sound is flawless every night. The sound engineers in Japan are highly respected positions. They get paid well for doing what they do. Most of the venues, which they call live houses, most of the live houses have all their own backline equipment that most of the bands use. Like, bands in Japan don't bring all their gear every show. The venues provide it all. And like, how amazing would that be in the States for independent unsigned bands that are touring and doing stuff to just show up and not have to lug their gear every night? Like, they just played on good quality equipment.
Yeah, it sounds nuts, man. I went to a show not too long ago, and I'm used to going to shows that are somewhat on time, and you know, you get there and they say that they're playing at 9, they play at 9, maybe 9:05. But I went to a show recently and it was a little bit more low budget, and you know, like, what time do you guys play? Oh, we play at 10. I show up at 9 something, and they're like, oh, it's actually pushed back. We're not playing until 11:30. And I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that doesn't happen there. Yeah, because that's actually perceived as like very unprofessional.
Well, and which it is.
People there don't like to be unprofessional. It's great.
Well, that's awesome. So let's wrap this up with, all right, so we said we'd give away the grab bag of stuff from Scorpion and Dirtbag at the end here. So what you need to do to win this is go to the comment section on the Talk To Me page on Facebook, comment your favorite drummer, and I will pull from that, and we will randomly select a winner for this grab bag, and then we will get your sizes and get them over to Doug so he can send out a nice grab bag of stuff. Just go to the Talk To Me page, comment your favorite drummer, and be entered in to win some good stuff from Scorpion Percussion and Dirtbag Clothing. On both of those, what's the best way to follow Scorpion Percussion and Dirtbag Clothing?
Yeah, man. We got social media for both companies and the band, too. You know, Dirtbag Clothing, Facebook, and as well as Scorpion Percussion. Instagrams are up, YouTube, we got some videos up and stuff like that. Come over and give us a like and tune in.
Very cool. And what we will do, we'll end off this episode with a song by your band Core. So what song would you like to hear?
Oh, excellent. We have a song called Unicorn.
Unicorn it is. All
I
right.
I really like unicorns.
That's the best way to end an episode right there. All right, so a huge thank you to Jordan Rudis of Dream Theater. Distance Over Time out now. They are out on tour, so make sure and check them out. And once again, just a huge thank you to Doug Smith of Scorpion Percussion, Dirtbag Clothing, and his band Core. And we will now check out Unicorn off of, what album would that be off of? I don't know.
The Way We Are.
All right, Unicorn off of The Way We Are. Thanks again, Doug.
All right, guys.